Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thanks for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined today by Saul Kuhman. Saul, we're recording this on October 9th. We're going to drop it on October 10th. And that means that it's the time of year right between when we had all the craziness of recruiting and commitments in September. Fall ball really gets started in earnest this weekend. And so this is a nice little sweet spot to have these catching up conversations that, you know, we just don't have a ton of opportunity to do because the lacrosse calendar has become 365 days. So we've got a lot to go over. I'm really excited for the folks who haven't heard from you in a long time or don't know you to get to know you a little bit. And there's tons that we can touch on. So first and foremost, thanks so much for joining.
Awesome. Psyched to be here, man. Good to talk to you.
So the hook is that last night you were honored at the Bronx Lacrosse annual fundraiser, and it was a tremendous night for lacrosse. So first of all, congratulations. And second of all, how was it? Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on at Bronx Lacrosse?
Sure. Yeah, it was an awesome night, man. I was obviously super humbled and excited to get honored, be on the same stage with Charlotte North. There were not a lot of similarities in our lacrosse games, but it was nice to be up there and honored at the same time. They moved to a new location. It was bigger. They were a little worried about filling it. And I think we did a really nice job filling the room. And it was great. They surpassed their goal of raising $1 million, which was a record, I think. And, it's just an unbelievable organization. I had spent some time in the Bronx the day before. I went and watched the boys' high school team practice and the girls' middle school team practice and spent some time in one of the middle schools. And the organization is incredible. I mean, they're in four middle schools and two high schools in the Bronx. They're making a huge impact on these kids' lives. They're getting sticks in their hand. They're keeping them in their hands. And they've got some really high-end players. I think the thing that really surprised me the most was just how good the kids were, right? I mean, they have a kid, Jordani, who's going to Delaware on a full boat next year. And I was super impressed with a couple of the freshmen, one of the sophomores that, they've got some real talent floating around and they're, doing an awesome job. It was really, a really incredible night.
Yeah, Jordani Rosario, who you're referring to, a top 100 player in the class of 2027. One of the most interesting stories, if you aren't familiar with Jordani, make sure to check out InsideLacrosse.com. There are a couple articles about his recruiting journey, ultimately deciding that he wants to be a Blue Hen. So, certainly one of the elements of your relationship to lacrosse is philanthropic. Obviously, you've been extremely generous and probably typified by being the chair of the USA Lacrosse Foundation Board. But let's just take a little bit of a step back for folks that are unfamiliar with your bio. Best known as a Johns Hopkins Blue Jay. And why don't we tell our listeners a little bit about where you grew up, where you learned how to play the game, fell in love with it, and then ultimately what led you to Homewood?
Sure. Yeah. So I started playing kind of late. I was a soccer player and a hoops player. I jumped in goal for the first time in ninth grade. I was a soccer goalie. The team needed a goalie. I was very average as a goalie. Played in ninth grade. Played varsity in 10th grade. And at that point, thought I was going to play hoops or soccer or both in college. And so my junior year, I was like, I'm done getting pelted with lacrosse balls because I just wasn't very good and it hurt. And so I ended up playing midfield and I got good kind of quickly and ended up taking a postgraduate year at a school called Hotchkiss in Connecticut. Had a really good Hotchkiss team. Matt Strebel, who you guys probably know, was on our team. Adam Pascal. We had a bunch of really good players. I think the team was like 18-1, had a just blast playing with that group. Ended up deciding to go to Johns Hopkins and had a really great career there. Had an awesome recruiting class. Went to a bunch of Final Fours, didn't unfortunately win a championship, but had a great experience and have been involved at Hopkins since.
And how'd you get involved with USA Lacrosse? And what exactly is the foundation board for those that don't understand the distinction between the corporation side, which is a little bit more of the operations, and then the foundation board?
Yeah, so the way they're structured is they have two separate boards. One of them, I would say, focuses more on like governance and rules. And then the other one focuses more on philanthropy, right? Really raising money to grow the game. The mission is the same. The board's very intertwined. We do a meeting together every year. They both have representation on the, the Hall of Fame committee. They both have representation on the committee that selects the coaches for all the U.S. national teams. But that's the real difference, right? We've got a gala in the summer. We're always trying to raise dollars, and that board is you know spending more time on governance and really managing the actual organization.
So you brought up the national teams, and certainly that's a huge focus for USA Lacrosse. Coming up on 2 weeks ago, I was at headquarters to watch the Atlas Cup, which brought four teams, four men's teams, four women's teams, each representing USA, Canada, Haudenosaunee, and Puerto Rico, to each play each other, kind of round robin style, three games over the course of Friday, Saturday, Sunday, kind of as a precursor towards the beginning of qualification for LA 2028. What are your thoughts on kind of the state of sixes this march toward LA 28 and what it means for USA Lacrosse?
I think it's a big deal. I mean, I think, look, you know, having a chance to have, you know, lacrosse players play in the Olympics is huge. And it's been a lot of work by a lot of people for a while to get to this point. I'd say the process of getting in the Olympics was a, you know, more political process than I ever would have kind of imagined if I hadn't, you know, if I hadn't had a sort of a front row seat to watch it. But it is super exciting. Now, you know, I didn't know this, so I'm assuming that most of the listeners don't know this, but there are the reason that sixes is the discipline for the Olympics is basically a couple of simple things, right? One, the number of athletes in the Olympics in general is capped, right? So to get, if we had, you know, tried to put a team of 20 people in, or 22 or 24, whatever you're carrying versus 12, that's just a lot more athletes, and it becomes really difficult to get the approvals to put, the sport into the Olympics. The second thing is the Olympic committees don't like when there is a country or two that are super dominant, right? They want it to be fair. They want other countries to have a chance to win. You know, I think their feeling again was if it's, you know, field, like when you go watch the U.S. women play in the World Championships, they tend to dominate ex-Canada. You know, with sixes, if a team like Japan can pop three, four, five, six really good players, all of a sudden the competition becomes better. And it makes it just, you know, it makes a better competition, which is obviously a huge positive. So, so those are, I think, the reasons for sixes. I, you know, as far as the game, you know, I love it. I mean, I think it's exciting. There's more goals. It's fast paced. You know, they obviously like that that there's a defined timeline for each game. So getting rid of obviously as many face-offs and that type of stuff, makes it easier and more predictable for the Olympics, which is again, another thing that's kind of a big deal. My take is they're all figuring out, you know, how to play sixes, right? And it's some combination of, you know, things from field. And I think there's a lot of stuff from box. And, you know, we've got, you know, two head coaches now, you know, Lindsay and Andy Shea, and they're both talking to each other and trying to figure out, you know, are there nuances and things we should be paying attention to from hockey, from basketball, from lots of different things. So I think the game's evolving. I think that it will be continue to play differently. I think how you stack the rosters with middies versus attackers versus defenders is really interesting. And I think they're trying different things. And I think it'll continue to change between now and 2028. It's pretty exciting.
Before we move off of the kind of state of the game conversation, I think, you know, that your explanation was very much like kind of the top of the pyramid, but you know, the Bronx lacrosse experience is a little bit more of the bottom of the pyramid. How do you, through all of your lenses and point of view, regard where lacrosse currently is relative to where you think it should be and where you'd like to see it go, not just over the course of the next 3 years, as we march toward 28, but maybe over the course of the next 5 to 10?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I love lacrosse. I love the game. It's been hugely impactful in my life, right? I've met, you know, so many of my best friends. My kids play. I love watching them play. I love the journey that they're on. You know, I love the mission of USA Lacrosse and Bronx fits into it, right? I mean, it's an element of, you know, growing the game, keeping sticks in kids' hands, you know, making sure that the game's affordable for people, because it is expensive to buy all the equipment, and places like Bronx and Harlem are doing unbelievable things to help with a lot of that stuff. And then obviously supporting the national teams and putting the best product on the field, you know, is obviously another part of it. So, you know, the game is growing. I think the statistics over the last couple of years have been good. You know, some of the stuff that's interesting is, you know, it's growing in some ways where there's more kids playing. One of the big focuses has been, you know, a lot of people play and they play for a year or two and they get frustrated because it is hard to throw and catch. And then we lose people after those first couple of years. So we've been spending a lot of time trying to, you know, make sure that people stay and, you know, they get into year two and year three. And once their skills start to get better, they have a tendency to stay longer. So, so the game is growing. I want it to continue to grow. I think there's a lot of room for it to grow. I think as the, you know, as the pro league, which I'm sure we'll talk about, the PLL continues to grow, hopefully gets to the point where people are playing full time, and, you know, being able to earn more. I think again, more kids will look up and say, this is kind of where I want to be at some point in my life. Like they do with basketball and hockey and soccer and some of these other games. So, it's a long winded way of saying, you know, the game is growing. It's becoming more accessible. But there's a long way to go, and I want to see it continue to grow.
So you brought up that your kids play and that you've really enjoyed watching them. And your daughter, Corey, is a member of the class of 2027 who recently committed to North Carolina. So you kind of reached the finish line of going through the lacrosse parent journey of seeing your kid get recruited. What was that like?
It was intense. It was an awesome experience. I feel really fortunate that she had such a good experience. I'm proud of her. She worked really, really hard to get there. Some kids, it just kind of comes naturally and they're, you know, crazy athletic and she's had, you know, been one that just really had to work for it. And she's put the time in and focused and, you know, really doesn't go, you know, a day or two without, training at a pretty high level. So I'm super proud of her. It was hard. I mean, I sort of always thought like you just go to visit some schools and you kind of know right away. She went to North Carolina first. She loved it. And she went to a bunch of other schools and she loved most of them. So it was really hard for her to make a choice. And for a, 16-year-old kid, the things that they see when you walk through a school are kind of different than the things their parents are seeing, right? You know, we come out of a school and we're like, the weather, does the weather matter to you? I'm much happier when it's sunny outside and warm. And she was like, I don't care about the weather. It doesn't matter. So, there were certain things like that where like, wow, I'm surprised she doesn't care about the weather, but she did. And so there were just certain things that, that you and your wife care about. And, when you're 16, you you're not sure if she's going to care about the same things when she's 18 and then when she's 22. But it was a great process. We were, we were lucky to have some good options for her and I'm proud of her. I mean, she worked hard and she's feeling good. I mean, it's interesting. Like you go from this whole journey, the stress, making your decision, then you feel great. And you get to enjoy it for a few days and then the focus becomes, all right, look, you got 23 months to get a hell of a lot better than you are right now if you want to touch the field at this place. So you kind of go from, my wife had looked at me at one point and she's like, don't we get to like celebrate this a little bit? Like this is, I'm like, hey, we celebrated for 2 days. Like she's got to get back to work, right? It's enough. So she's back to grinding again and she's got to get better, right? I mean, it's one thing to go get into one of these schools and have a great opportunity. It's another thing to play. And I do see some kids kind of step off the gas, once they reach sort of the first goal. I've just been trying to pound home. This is just the start, right? This is where the work starts. And she's, hopefully responding pretty well so far. So we'll see.
Well, so that's a point that we talk about a lot on this podcast, but there is one moment that kind of exists in between that you and I spoke about off camera that I wanted to address specifically, because I feel like it's the type of thing that as a parent, and I've spent the last 6, 7, 8 weeks talking to college coaches about how recruiting works. And I've been getting so much feedback from parents appreciative of what those conversations have revealed. And what that feedback has really revealed to me is, the assumption that this is very much kind of an opaque black box that carries with it a lot of surprises and a lot of unknowns is true, right? It kind of proved the thesis or the hypothesis a little bit. But one of the things that I would imagine a lot of folks don't know is that the joy of committing is offset by the kind of trauma, is probably too strong of a word, but the pain or the angst of having to tell all the other folks that recruited you that you're not going to go there. What was that like?
That was terrible. I mean, it was, and just because I've been involved in the game for a long time, I had known some of these coaches myself, and some of them I've had long relationships with, and obviously I stayed out of all this stuff, but it was hard. It was really hard for her. You know, I think a few of them were in particular very hard. Obviously, we live in Boston, so we've spent a lot of time at, you know, Boston College, spending, you know, going to games and whatever. And that was a place that she had always loved. And, you know, obviously Hopkins, where I went, she had spent a lot of time with the staff there over the years. So there were some really tough conversations. There were, you know, there were some tears. There were some, you know, those were, it's not easy to do. You know, these coaches spend a lot of time. You spend a lot of time with them. You invest it. You go to their, you know, prospect days and camps, and, you know, you kind of dream about going to all these schools. And to your point, you have no idea who's actually going to show up. And then, you know, when a few of them do and you get to know them and you sort of, you're like, man, I can't believe we only have to pick one, or we only get to pick one, right? I like
totally
kept saying, I'd like to see, you know, this version of her, and I'd like to see her play in this offense and at this school. But, you know, you get to pick one, and it's funny, once you pick it, you're kind of all in, right? You go from
totally
from being, you know, I remember the night before being like, I don't know which way this is going to go. And then now I'm like, I got Carolina hats and sweatshirts, and like, I mean, I couldn't be more excited. I'm watching their girls' soccer team playing games now. I mean, you know, our family's all in, and it's super exciting. So, but it is hard, and it's a lot of pressure to put on a young kid. I will say, I feel like she grew up a lot during that process. I mean, and I learned a lot about seeing how she handled herself, you know, how she was on the phone. You know, she wanted to follow up and send notes to all the coaches and thank them and try to do it the right way, you know, cause it is a learning experience. And, you know, we're always trying to tell our kids, like, you got one reputation, you get to do this once. And, you know, people move around, you're going to move around in life. And, you know, treat people the way you'd want to be treated. These people spend a lot of time with you. Make sure they know how much you appreciate it. And, you know, I don't know how the two boys will do, but I'm proud of the first one so far. So it's been,
there you go.
It was a good process.
So there's two ways to transition into the next part of the conversation, that I'm curious about. You used the term front row seat when it came to your ability to watch lacrosse move toward Olympic inclusion. And in some ways you have a little bit of a front row seat for the way in which this post-house settlement modernization of college sports is affecting lacrosse. One element being through what we just described of having your daughter go through the recruiting process, and the other, you know, being a supportive alum of Johns Hopkins. And in North Carolina, you know, they've been very public outwardly about the way in which they've invested more resources, particularly on the scholarship side, into all of their sports, going from, I believe, a little bit over 300 to a little bit over 500 scholarships across all their sports in the 25-26 academic year. And then, you know, Johns Hopkins is one of the most interesting kind of places that college lacrosse has played, because it's, you know, a D3 academic institution with D1 men's and women's lacrosse. So looking at it through those two lenses and any other, you know, kind of perspective that you have, how do you describe the way in which college lacrosse is a part of this changing landscape of college athletics?
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely going to be winners and losers. You know, I think it's really interesting to see, you know, so far, you know, it seems like it's going to be in many cases good for the women's game. You know, I think most of these athletic departments are realizing that, you know, such a big chunk of all the revenue share is going to football and basketball, that they need to support some of the women's programs in general. And lacrosse seems to be one of those programs that's getting some really good support. So, you know, at some of the schools that have big football, the Penn States, the Floridas, the Clemsons, the, you know, UNC you mentioned, you know, Northwestern is another one that's getting a lot of support. You know, you're seeing it. The men's side is a little different. I think it's, you know, when you take a step back, there are, I think, some programs that are going to have to kind of fight. We're going to have to raise some money from the outside, and it's not crystal clear to me yet if all this stuff is going to be a positive. And, you know, I think you're going to need alums to step up and contribute to be able to do what they, you know, what they want to do. You know, my alma mater, Hopkins, is in an interesting spot. They're in it's a negative in some ways because they don't have other big Division I sports that they can sort of leverage off of. But the flip side is they really only need to come up with dollars to support a men's and women's lacrosse team. So, you know, they've been able to increase their scholarships a little bit this year, both on the men's and women's side. You know, probably not as much as where they want to end up, I think this was a good first step, but I think the school has been really supportive. There's an awesome athletic director there. She was a women's lacrosse player herself, so she really cares about the sport. And I think that, you know, I think they're going to end up being in an okay spot. But it's tricky and it's changing, and I don't think anyone knows exactly what it's going to look like. But I think my key takeaway is I think it's going to end up being pretty good for a lot of the women's programs, and a little bit more questionable for some of the men's.
Yeah, I think you reiterated what we've heard a lot, you know, talking to Coach Tambroni or Coach Danowski over the course of the last couple months. The term unknown has definitely been revisited. Tambo was clear that he thinks his program has benefited. And I think that when you look at the commitments that they've brought in, and you can infer a fair amount of what they would have had to have spent scholarship dollars wise in order to do that with the players that they got and where they're from and everything that goes along with that. Yeah. You can kind of see the action, that's, you know, kind of supports that. And to your other point about the internal dynamics, one of the things that Coach Nassi said is that, you know, whatever the reality is this year does not necessarily mean that's what the reality is going to be next year. And I think that's the level of uncertainty that's so interesting because, you know, I think that, you know, particularly when it comes to North Carolina's men's class in the 2027s, one of the questions that I've talked to a lot of their competitors about is to what extent did, because there were rumors all summer in the wake of that announcement that I referenced that Bubba Cunningham wrote, how do you actually think this is going to come to fruition? And whenever you're in a position where the potential or possibility exists, but it hasn't actually come to fruition yet, you're going to find people that exist everywhere on the kind of road to what it might end up looking like. And I think the outcome was probably, you know, at the most extreme predicted or forecasted, you know, place. And so then the question is like, were you taken by surprise, right? And I think that was what was most interesting about this market. And I think that, you know, again, on a year-over-year basis and how we know how this whole thing unfolds when it comes to recruiting talent, retaining talent, and then developing talent, right, once it arrives on campus, it carries a lot of unknowns with it. So to that end, it'll be very interesting to see how it unfolds. And I agree with you. I think that there will be winners and losers, but I don't think it's going to correlate one-to-one with how folks would have predicted those winners and losers are going to be on the basis of traditional power structures.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's interesting to see the way things are being supported, right? I mean, we, you know, there are some schools that are actually getting cash, right? So they're in a spot where they've got dollars to spend. And some of those dollars are going directly back to the athletes. And then there are other schools like North Carolina that you use as an example where, you know, where they're just, you know, they just have more scholarship dollars. And so, so it's, you know, it's interesting to see how it's going to work. And I think what you're seeing is some of these schools are changing the way, that they're attacking their recruiting. Some are spending more time focused on the portal, because those dollars actually, you know, they can use them in different ways. Right. And so, you know, if you're offering a kid $50,000 to come play, you know, come use your fifth year because you got hurt 1 year. There aren't a lot of schools that can do that. And so there's a few that have been able to do that and they found some great transfers in the portal. You know, there's others that are, you know, like that are basically just saying, hey, look, we've got more scholarships. We're going to go, you know, we're going to go deep and hard and try to get the best classes in the country, and invest in our kids that way. So it's interesting, and you're right. There is no, I don't know what it's going to look like next year. It's really hard to predict, but it was, it felt a little bit like the Wild Wild West this year.
All right. So let's transition to kind of the last, sector vertical, that you have a relationship with to the sport, which is the professional side. You know, you brought it up in the context of the notion of full-time athletes, and you were one of the earliest investors in the Premier Lacrosse League and the formation of that. And obviously, you know, we can hear a little bit more behind that or a little bit more about the backstory there. But then also a part of an ownership group, for the Oshawa Firewolves as well. So you mentioned the relationship to box lacrosse when it comes to the development of sixes and what that looks like. And I know that your kids, have played a fair amount of box over the course of their lives as well. So I guess just from a high level standpoint, how do you describe the role that professional lacrosse is playing in the sport now compared to, call it, I don't know, both 10 years ago and 25 years ago when you were coming at it?
Yeah, I think it's getting bigger. I mean, I think, listen, you put on ESPN on Saturday night and, you know, at a certain time of the year and you're watching, you know, you're watching games that are in, you know, the coverage is completely different than if you go back and look at, you know, what some of those MLL games look like 10 and 15 years ago. So, you know, obviously this ESPN contract and partnership for the PLL is a big deal. I think, you know, I think more kids are paying attention and watching, and I think it's become more aspirational for, you know, for young kids to want to be professional lacrosse players, right? There were not that many of them. You know, the gates were not the norm, right? Of guys that played at a high level and could make a career, out of lacrosse. And so, you know, now there's more people that are doing it. And so I think that's obviously awesome. I mean, if the PLL can get to full time, we need to obviously pay people more and figure out how to do it. But I think that's the next big step for them. And to have to figure out how to do that. The NLL, I don't think has changed that much, actually. It's been a good league for a long time. It's interesting where there's just some cities where it just takes. And, you know, you go to a game in Buffalo or Colorado and you're like, holy smokes, right? Or anywhere in Canada. And it's just unbelievable. The fans are amazing. The stadiums are sold out. It is really incredible to see. And then there's some cities where, you know, you've seen some teams that have just not been able to make it in certain cities, and they just can't seem to fill up the arena. And I don't know exactly why that is. I think the product on the field is great pretty much everywhere, but it just takes in some places and it doesn't in others. So, our team was obviously in Albany, and we thought Albany, frankly, was going to be a better spot for us. We had a great arena. The town was supportive. You know, I think when we looked at how the PLL did when they went to visit Albany, which they do, you know, every year, it was one of their best. They did phenomenally well selling. And so we thought it'd be a great spot. The high school teams, I think Scotty Marr told us, I think when he moved up there were 6 high school teams or something. And, you know, now there's 36, or I'll butcher the numbers, but it's grown dramatically. And we just weren't able to get enough people to go to the games, and our team had been pretty good. So our view is, you know, kind of Canada was where it's at, and, you know, being able to be outside Toronto and kind of having hopefully a rivalry with the Rock, you know, kind of like a Yankees Mets type thing would be an interesting move. And so we just moved up. We're excited. We've got a really good young team. And I'm pretty pumped.
I know that you can't get into the specifics. Nobody likes negotiating through the media, but we can't bring up the NLL and not talk about the fact that there is an ongoing labor negotiation. Any thoughts at a high level as to how this CBA thing is going?
Yeah, I don't know. I will say one of my partners came to the Bronx Lacrosse event last night, and before he left, the last thing he said to me is, I think we're starting to make some progress. We might be okay. So I would say last I had heard, it was kind of 50-50, and I'm feeling a little bit better after the data point I got last night, but I'm not involved enough. We've got one of our partners, Russ, who's working really hard on this, and I'm hopeful that they get to play. I mean, it'd be such a bummer if they can't, but I don't know which way it's going to go.
Yeah, I would echo that. I think Inside Lacrosse, we posted an article updating the negotiations last weekend, and I think that, you know, that had a relatively dour tone. I do think that in the wake of that article coming out, there had been fair amount of progress made, and we just had a new update come out on Thursday as we're recording this, that while the headline is really focused on the angst of the fans, I do think that some of the content carried within shows that has been progress made this week. And this really is kind of crunch time, in the sense that, you know, we're not to the point where things have been canceled that can't be rescheduled and get, you know, the season started on time. And I think that's where, you know, with the relationships that I have with a bunch of teams, you know, I'm hopeful that that's able to happen. Obviously, this was an off season that, you know, really did kind of function around the maintenance of the franchises, or in the case of the Firewolves, the relocation of a franchise. There are a lot of teams that have done a really nice job in terms of, you know, selling their early season games and selling some sponsorship. And it would be a bummer if any of that was derailed by a labor dispute. So certainly, you know, fans of the league, fans of the product, hoping that comes to if not hasty conclusion, then certainly a conclusion on a timeline that allows them to hit opening weekend.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think we're supposed to play Toronto opening weekend, so we are looking forward to that game. And I hope they get everything settled, because it would definitely be a bummer.
So before we part ways, we certainly covered a lot of ground. Anything you want the audience to be aware of in terms of opportunities to support or throw their weight behind some of the stuff that you care about and are working on?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, listen, I would just say, if you love the game, you got to just find a way to give back in some way. And there's so many ways to do it, right? I mean, it's helping young coaches out and finding other stuff for them to do. It's, getting involved in stuff like Bronx and Harlem and some of these great organizations that are getting sticks in kids' hands and giving them opportunities they wouldn't have on their own. It's getting involved with USA Lacrosse and helping get us set to try to win a gold in 28 or grow the game or help all of our national teams. So I mean, listen, there's all kinds of ways. Yeah, I always just say if something's been good to you, find a way to be good back, and there's lots of ways to do it. So that's probably all I got on that.
All right, man. Well, we really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Congratulations again on the honor from Bronx and the successful night raising a bunch of funds to help support those kids. And look forward to talking to you again soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much, man. Great to see you, buddy. I'll see you soon.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.